In 1894, one Australian became special correspondent in China of the influential Times for his legendary 3,000-kilometer travel from Shanghai to Rangoon with only £18 in his pocket. He was called George Morrison. When Morrison started out in the Chinese outfit with Chinese porters on a journey across China, it never occurred to him that he would become a world-renowned correspondent a few years later in an event that stirred the world. The church had triggered the storm. Starting from Matteo Ricci, the church had always wanted to make an expedition into China. Five emperors of the Qing dynasty from Guangxi to Daoguang had boycotted the entrance of the church into China. In the middle of the 19th century, under the cover of strong warships and powerful cannons, large numbers of missionaries streamed into China. Emperor Daoguang was forced to lift the ban in 1844. Very soon, large-scale missionary activity spread across China to the detriment of people's interests. Cathedrals sprang up like mushrooms in places like Hebei and Shandong provinces. By the end of the 19th century, more than 500 missionary stations spread up in Chinese villages. In the end, a campaign against foreign religion broke out. In Xibiao Bei Hutong in East Beijing, one Ming Dynasty architectural complex is still in good shape. It was the residence of Yu Qian, vice war minister of the Ming Dynasty. He opposed moving the capital to the south and fought and defended Beijing when powerful enemy in the north tried to overthrow the Ming Dynasty. The Ming Dynasty was finally replaced by the Qing. Time went on. This cathedral complex had witnessed the vicissitudes of the last centuries. Its owners changed many times, but its brick carvings and stone steps have remained the same. The complex suddenly became the focus of Beijing in April 1900, during the upsurge of Yi He Tuan Boxers Movement, when Yi He Tuan set up the first association that consisted of 100 and more members in it. The movement that originated in Shandong soon spread to Hebei, Beijing and Tianjin in less than a year's time. On April 15th, more than 100 Yi He Tuan members gathered at Lugou Qiao outside Beijing, passing out notices against foreign powers and missionaries. The turn of the century saw the most chaotic period in China, a period that altered the direction of the Chinese Empire. When the West was rejoicing over the arrival of the new century, the stamina that erupted in China would shake the world. Dong Jiaoming Lane was originally a very ordinary street of Beijing, not far from the Forbidden City. It was originally called Dong Jiaomi Lane. Running from east to west, it is crossed by several small south-north lanes. After the Opium War, it changed its name to Dong Jiaoming Lane, as foreign envoys stationed there. After the Second Opium War, foreign diplomatic corps began to build legations there. In April 1900, the foreigners in Dong Jiaoming Lane began to feel the Yi He Tuan impact. The concern of the Boxers, who emerged in 1898 in Shandong had begun at the end of 1899. On January 27, 1900, ministers of Britain, America, France, Germany and Italy had presented a joint note to the Chinese Foreign Office requesting the Qing government to suppress the Yihetuan. Yihetuan's notices of burn the cathedrals, kill the Christians appeared in Beijing on April 29th. The spearhead was directed against foreigners in China. They tore up rails along the line from Lugoqiao to Baoding, burned down railway stations, demolished the bridges and cut telegraph lines, to the great horror of foreigners in Beijing. On May 19th, Imperial diplomatic corps in the capital held a joint conference. They decided to call for military help from their governments. On June 4th, they cabled their respective governments to send troops to Beijing. The cables streaming up from the French post office, their only channel to the outside world in Dongjiaminle, stunned the European countries and America. In early June, Times published an SOS from his special correspondent Morrison. His concise cable had a greater impact than any political measures the foreign diplomats could think of. It became an important element for the British government to send expeditionary troops to China. To recover and strengthen the colonial rule in China, Europe and America resorted to armed intervention. Britain moved troops from Hong Kong and Japan from Hiroshima. France sent warships from Vietnam and the Mediterranean, and the US from Manila. Tsarist Russia entered Northeast China from Siberia. Germany appointed Alfred von Wiedersee as Allied Commander-in-Chief. The eight-power Allied forces, led by Wiedersee, left Europe for China. In the British Library in London, we looked up British newspapers from April to June 1900. The front page of influential newspapers carried news about the situation in Beijing and the British legation in China. In the files, we came across the diary one British officer wrote in June 1900.
This is a copy of the... And I suppose
this officer recorded his expedition in China. He wrote that bad news from China made him receive orders to go to fight in China and thus turned a new page in his life.
It's quite jokey. I mean, it's quite common for English people, yes.
He said he was very tall.
他穿一个柠檬色长袍 Let's see, 他说 当时这是李鸿章，这是哪个军队人，他还没到北京去，李鸿章已经告诉他，所有的大使馆都破坏了，所有的外国人都死了，而且 不是对，因为可能李鸿章在香港，他也不知道北京，我承认你们一定到那边去，前进北京，而且我请你们不要搞乱，还请你们就 he says not punish the innocent alike with the guilty， 所以 他说应该分析一下这些中国人，他们是不是义和团？要是他们是义和团的话，你可以杀他们，而且一般的中国人，请你们恩量。
In Beijing, Morrison waited eagerly for the arrival of reinforcement. He sat before a map every day, calculating the arrival date. Unknown to Morrison was that 22 warships and cruisers of foreign powers were already assembled at Dagu Forts, Tianjin. The Allied forces launched a frenzied attack on Dagu on June 20th and took it in a few hours. 15,000 Allied soldiers proceeded towards Tianjin on June 20th. The advance was slowed down by attacks of ambushed Yihe Tuan and the Qing army. On July 13th, the Allied forces stormed Tianjin by two routes. They lost some 800 men and took the city on the 14th. On June 18th, 1900, the British Times carried a dispatch by Morrison, the last piece of news from Beijing before foreign legations were besieged. The dispatch was written on June 14th. A serious anti-foreign outbreak took place last night when some of the best buildings in eastern part of the city were burned and hundreds of native Christians and servants employed by foreigners were massacred within 2 miles of the Imperial Palace. It was an anxious night for all the foreigners who were collected under the protection of foreign guards. The Boxers burned the Roman Catholic East Cathedral, the largest of churches. If reinforcement of the foreign guards do not arrive today, the chaos might worsen. Reliable sources claim that no Britons were hurt. Morrison paid a man 20 taels of silver to send this dispatch out. The legation area was besieged on the 20th. Morrison tried to send news to Tianjin by writing it on a piece of thin paper, then soaking it in oil to make it waterproof. He put it in a bowl of gruel and entrusted it to a young Chinese Christian, but his attempt failed. Since they got no news from Beijing, Western media turned to their special correspondent in Shanghai. On July 16, 1900, the British Daily Mail carried a dispatch of their special correspondent in Shanghai, which claimed that foreign legations in Beijing were occupied and all Europeans killed. It claimed that all Europeans fought courageously to the death against sanguine savages. They fired their last bullets and faced death unflinchingly. This illusory account caused a strong reaction in Europe. At this time, the British troops had already arrived in Beijing. A war correspondent took this picture of them. At dawn on August 14th, the 8-power Allied forces launched a general attack on Beijing. Vying for credit, the Russian troops attacked Dongbianmen Gate, which was closer to the legations, instead of Dongzhimen Gate, according to plan. They fought a fierce battle against the tough resistance of the Qing troops and the Yihe Tuan. Booming guns threw the Forbidden City into panic. On the night of August 14th, the last column of the 8-power Allied forces entered the city of Beijing. In the small hours of 15th, Empress Dowager Cixi disguised herself and fled, taking Emperor Guangxu with her. Before her departure, When Emperor Guangxu and concubine Zhen paid their respects to the supreme ruler, concubine Zhen pleaded for her to leave Emperor Guangxu behind to negotiate with the allied forces. Empress Dowager Cixi was so enraged that she ordered the eunuchs to throw concubine Zhen down a well. She then fled from the summer palace to Juyong Pass, Ba Daling, Yanqing, and straight to Xi'an. At 5 p.m., British and American troops stormed Dongjiaming Lane. The encirclement of the legation area and the Pekdong Cathedral was lifted. 40 years ago, it took the Anglo-French Allied forces 40 days to proceed from Tianjin to Beijing. 40 years later, the same route took the eight-power Allied forces only 10 days. For an ancient country with thousands of years of history, for a nation, this was an unprecedented greater humiliation than the failure of the Opium War. The capital of the Chinese Empire was turned into ruins by the eight-power Allied forces. The massacre began. Wolsey openly ordered his officers to punish China severely. Cries of fear erupted and the city was drawn into corpses. People recalled later, the foreigners killed countless people the day they entered the city. Morrison, who had called for help, was stunned by the atrocity of the Allied forces. When the besieged foreigners rejoiced over the arrival of the reinforced troops, this Australian correspondent began to report on their plundering activities. On August 17th, he cabled Times that the Pekdong Cathedral was rescued, foreign forces controlled Beijing, there was no government here, French and Russian flags flew in the best parts of the Forbidden City. The Empress Dowager Cixi, the Emperor, and Prince Duan had fled to Taiyuan in Shanxi. Their destination might be Xi'an. Beijing Public News stopped publication on the 13th. A Russian correspondent of New Borderland, who was reporting about the Allied forces, described what he saw in Beijing that day. Silence reigned at dusk. Rifle shots stopped. I climbed up the city wall again to look at the city. Frightening ammunition had been flying over the ancient city from 2 a.m. to 2 p.m. There were hot lead bullets, steel fragmentation shells, and shells the Chinese had manufactured with wrought iron. The people shed blood for a whole 12 hours at the serene city walls of the sacred capital. The cloudless sky dimmed over the deafening booms of bombardment. Two months after Beijing was occupied, a journalist who was sent by Le Figaro to cover Beijing came to a city of debris and ruins. After fire and shell have crumbled away Beijing's flimsy materials, the city is only a mass of debris. It was all ruins. Flags of European countries flew over its walls. In the Forbidden City and Temple of Heaven, places where serenity used to reign, the cavalry of the savages now galloped. Tens of thousands of Indian soldiers sent by Britain garrisoned there. Their horses trampled everything. The pillaging of Beijing became a festival for the victors. While the Allied forces were slaughtering the Chinese, their wives at home received many postcards from Beijing. Some reported their feats. Others sent a safety note in the Chinese traditional style. They constituted a unique form of the history of invasion. Behind their romantic behavior were the humiliation and the suffering of the Chinese people. After their victorious entry into Beijing, the Allied forces paraded through the Forbidden City. They entered Daqing Gate and held an occupation ceremony as they marched to the central slated path. At the Meridian Gate, they made a show of their prowess. Then they marched into the palace, visited all the halls, and jostled to take pictures at the throne. Then they started to plunder. Alphonse Favier, Bishop of Perton Cathedral, excelled in Beijing's cultural relics. He guided the Allied forces in the plunder and carnage. He also pointed out places for Christians to loot. The soldiers even scraped off the gilded gold on bronze vests in the palace. The astronomical instruments of the ancient Beijing observatory became important targets too. They were divided between French and German troops. Many were carried to the French legation in China. To manifest their victory over China, the German troops moved them back to Germany as trophies. After the First World War, after a period of 20 years, the Treaty of Versailles stipulated that they should be returned to China. Today, the ancient observatory is still relating without words the calamities it had suffered. For about a year, Morrison exposed the brutality of Waterseas troops. On September 24th, Morrison cabled Times that the Russians were plundering the Summer Palace in an organized way. On November 24th, he reported that the Germans continued to harass places outside Beijing with an aim to loot. On December 28th, he reported that the Germans destroyed sacred architectures of imperial examinations. They burned the wood and built a German police station with the bricks. Cartoons like this appeared on British newspapers. The Chinese who killed foreigners were labeled as barbaric, while the foreigners who killed the Chinese were civilized. Waterseas, Allied Commander-in-Chief, was tremendously annoyed by Morrison's continuous exposure of the atrocities of the Allied forces, particularly of the German forces. On February 15, 1901, Waterseas wrote in his diary that Morrison exaggerated what he saw, like most British journalists were prone to do. I must keep an eye on him. These were scenes of Beijing, one correspondent took from the top of the Jingshan Hill. The soaring doves did not bring peace to Beijing. At the turn of the century, China was being cut up. Cartoons on foreign papers expressed the satisfaction of the foreign powers in trampling on a big country in the East. October 11th, 1900, Li Hongzhang, who was to take part in truce talks, arrived in Beijing under the escort of Russian troops. The toppling Qing dynasty had placed its hope on the senile minister. Foreign diplomats began to haggle. On December 24, 1900, apart from the eight powers, Belgium, Spain and Holland joined in to divide the spoils. They jointly proposed a 12-article convention that was not to be altered. New York Times gave a detailed description of the talks. Although the terms were harsh, Empress Dowager Cixi ordered Li Hongzhang to accept all, since there was no intention to punish her. Foreign and Chinese plenipotentiaries negotiated for 9 months in Dongjiao Mingliang until the Qing government was forced to sign the humiliating Treaty of 1901 on September 7, 1901. This picture was taken after the signing ceremony. The signing of the Treaty of 1901 was a heavy blow to Li Hongzhang, who died 2 months later. Yuan Shikai succeeded him and became Beiyang Minister and Viceroy of Zhili. Morrison was once regarded as a source of trouble by foreign diplomats. Still in Beijing in 1912, he received in August a letter of appointment sent by Cai Ting-gan, English Secretary and Interpreter of Yuan Shikai, President of the Republic of China. He was appointed political advisor to the president for 5 years. Morrison started a new role in China.